Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. We have Aaron Flores, who is a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and certified body trust provider. With over 10 years of experience, Aaron has worked with eating disorders in a variety of settings over his career, including the VA healthcare system and Center for Discovery. He currently has a private practice in Calabasas, California. Aaron uses intuitive eating, health at every size, and body trust as the framework to help individuals develop a more compassionate, non-judgmental approach to food in their body. His work has been featured on the 10% Happier podcast, in the New York Times, Huffington Post, and BuzzFeed. Aaron is also a frequent speaker presenting at national and international eating disorder conferences. In addition to his individual work with clients, he's also a podcaster. His two shows are Men Unscripted and Dietitians Unplugged. It is super excited to have Aaron on because I know for myself, I've got up and down with my weight. And of course, with that, shame, judgment, and uncertainty about my feelings about myself, how I view myself, and especially how I think others might view me. I know a lot of people struggle with body image, and a lot of people don't talk about how men struggle with body image. And that's what this episode is all about, to give a voice to men who struggle with body image, to give a platform and a place to be seen, to be heard, and to be understood. And Aaron is that person. So anyone listening, Aaron is an amazing resource, and I'm super excited to get into this episode. Here's a word from our sponsors. Welcome to this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. I don't think people listening understand how internally excited I am. You can't really see me. I'm externally excited. I'm waiting for this episode because I have gone through so much shifting and change in my own body that has made me think about myself and reassess me, as well as I have people in my life that struggle with body image, as well as I think a lot of people on this planet. And Aaron Flores is one of the leading experts in body image and men. And that is unheard of, as he describes himself. He's a unicorn. And who doesn't love unicorns? I mean, come on. My daughter has 4 unicorn stuffed animals.
I mean, they're probably some of the best, you know.
It's the best.
Icons around.
Come on, you know.
Yeah.
Them and narwhals, you know, unicorns of the sea and unicorns of the land.
Yeah.
And so, Aaron, I'm really pumped because I have a lot of, you know, not intimate questions, but like feeling vulnerable questions, as well as legitimate, you know, therapeutic questions.
Sure.
So we can hit both sides. But before we get into it, Aaron, could you introduce yourself, about who you are, a little bit about your journey, and what brings you here today?
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on. And it's great to be here. So I'm a dietitian. I'm also a certified body trust provider, and I'm based out of LA. I have a private practice. I see folks individually. I run a couple groups. One is a men's group. And then I also host a podcast called Men Unscripted, where I've had 2 seasons so far where I talk to men about the story of their body and what it's like for them to live in their body and their relationship with food. And up to this point, they're all anonymous. So everyone who's participated is, you know, they're not professionals in the field, right? They're just sort of folks that agreed to share their story. They're really vulnerable. They're really honest. And it's been so fun doing that show. I came to this work really as someone who struggled with their own relationship with food, as many dietitians do. So this was my career change. I went back to school at 30 to become a dietitian. And my hope then, my goal was to really be like a weight loss focused dietitian. I sort of wanted to be Richard Simmons. And that's because I was struggling myself, right? I had struggled with body size my entire life, really struggled with food my entire life, and probably had an eating disorder and was never diagnosed because of my gender and my body size. And so so that's what brought me to this work as a dietitian. And it was really through reading intuitive eating, learning about health at every size and body trust and all the other things that have come along since, that I've really just done a 180 and completely changed how I think about this work and the ways in which I engage with my clients, and really now just work exclusively with folks who have eating disorders or disordered eating or body image concerns.
I love that because it's so amazing how even as professionals, we have the ability to learn something new that can shift our perspective forever.
Yeah.
And it's just such a life-changing experience. And it's so interesting that, you know, as a therapist who's gone through, you know, school and work, and there's certain things that people really avoid working with. And in the mental health world, it's like, you know, schizophrenia or, you know, borderline personality disorder, right? And for the dietitian world, it's eating disorders.
I would agree. Totally.
Right.
It's like you hide.
Yeah. So you went all in. So as like, that sounds counterintuitive yet beautiful at the same time. What kind of pushed you over that hump of fear or that like pressure or pushback of like you work in that field?
So I started that way. Right. Mm-hmm. When I was, you know, going to school and finishing my undergrad and doing my internship, I was like, there are two things I don't want to do in work, right? I don't want to work in a nursing home and I don't want to work with eating disorders.
Yeah.
And what changed is really, so when I learned about intuitive eating, I ended up going to do supervision with Elise Resch, who's one of the co-authors of the book. And she invited me to do supervision, group supervision. And I did it for many years. And what I realized in listening to other professionals talk about their work was the conversations I really wanted to have around food and body were in the eating disorder world. The conversations that I was sort of taught to have and counsel around were superficial. They were shame-based. They were hierarchical, and meaning like I had the power that my client didn't. And it felt very like finger pointy, like you should be doing this. And if you don't, there's something wrong with you. And when I realized in my internship, I did my internship at the VA, and I was set to see a client, a veteran who was coming in for like some, I forget, nutrition education, whatever. And he came in and he sat down and he started crying. Nothing to do with what we were talking about, but just had, you know, been having a really hard series of months, was struggling in a lot of ways, and just unloaded in my office. And it was at that moment I was realized, well, it's stupid for me to talk about salt right now. Like, that's the least beneficial thing I can do to this moment.
Yeah.
Like, what if I'm just human and provide some empathy and listen? And maybe that's all we're going to do today. And I realized in that moment that it was an interaction that actually felt uncomfortable, but good. And I knew I didn't want to like just be like, here's the handout, go do this. I like to connect with people. I like to get to know folks. I liked nuance. I like complex issues. And I realized all of that is in the eating disorder world. And so I sort of said, like, this is where I have to be. Right. And I'm like so happy I am. Like, I love my job. It's hard, but I love it. Like, I have the best job in the entire world.
I love that you say that, because I think that these quote unquote hard spaces in the helping world get such a bad rep as being like outliers and weirdos and people that don't like, it's such a bad thing that if you love what you do and you care.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. I remember years ago, I love that you said that story, because years ago I had a situation where I had a walk-in. I was working at like a Medicare, Medicaid clinic, and I had a walk-in, and the guy, Parkinson's, and he walked to the therapy session not knowing that his therapist didn't show up that day. And I had a Gatorade on my desk, and I wasn't feeling so great. I have Crohn's. I was a little out of it. And I said, do you want some, like, you look really out of it. Do you want some Gatorade? And he like lost it. He could not control his emotions and was crying.
Yeah.
And I remember someone reprimanded me, like a colleague of mine, for crossing boundaries and say whatever it was. And my supervisor, who I obsessed over, I loved him, I love him still, this older gentleman came over to me and he said, you just learned what it meant to be a therapist. You were human.
Yeah. Right.
And like, I think that's something that we forget when it comes especially to eating and to food and to the way we view our bodies, is that human compassion.
We look at it as numbers and calories and ingredients and don't forget the percentage on the plate and all these things.
Yep.
And we sometimes forget about the human side. So for you, as an expert and specialist in the world of eating disorder, can you kind of give, and I'm not going to get into the distinction of disordered eating, eating disorder. Mm-hmm. I've had that on the show and please go look at, and I'm not here to dismiss you, but I want to get to more important things that I think you can give actual. Where does it be? How does it begin? What is like the percolating start of someone's change of viewpoint?
Yeah.
That kind of shapes it, because it is a mental health thing as well as a food world. It's a combo.
Right.
So how does that kind of shape itself within someone's life?
Yeah. Well, you said really one of the most important things right there is that it's a mental health disorder.
Yeah.
Right. So a lot of folks who don't understand eating disorders think of it as a choice.
Mm.
Right. And just eat the sandwich or don't eat this, whatever it is. Right. Just eat. I don't know why you can't just eat. Mm. And so there's a level of misunderstanding about how much of a mental health disorder this is. And you know, the ways in which diet culture impacts the development of an eating disorder is really significant. Mm-hmm. So there's these messages in our world that kids pretty much understand by the age of like 5 and 6, that some bodies are better than other bodies. And there's an understanding of dieting and eating less to be smaller and the pursuit of that. That combination of things really sort of creates this perfect storm where eating disorders develop. And they develop because people need coping. They're dealing with something, right? Something showing up, something hard happened, and making the focus on food and body is probably a way to numb and deal with something that is not yet ready to be dealt with. And so I tell all of my clients, like, there is wisdom in your coping. Your eating disorder probably saved your life, and it was there for a reason. It probably helped you. It's not anymore. But let's have some compassion and empathy for how it was there, right? I was just listening to your most recent podcast and talking about, it was talking about parenting, right? And it's not the parents' fault, right, that someone has an eating disorder. You know, it's a lot of really complex things that happen with how people develop eating disorders. One common scenario that I hear a lot about is where a lot of my clients remember at a very early age, their pediatrician telling their parents that this kid needs to lose weight or needs to be smaller, or you should be worried about their food.
Yeah.
And it to me, it's interesting how often that kind of narrative shows up as something that is really, really salient that people remember.
Yeah. You know, I really think that this is a thing that a lot of people don't know or don't realize. Even with children, is like a specialty of mine, or parenting and relationships, that the behavior is, there's a symptom behind the behavior, right? So whether it's a tantrum or screaming or yelling or whining or anger of a kid or even of your partner, there's something else going on, right? It's something behind. We have to look past just the behavior or the action that's being taken to see someone for the struggle that's going on. And the narrative I hear often, and maybe you can speak to this also, is not just the pediatrician, but the conversation in the home around food.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Right. And that's an obvious one, right? That's, and I'm not here to blame parents. You know, parents didn't know. It's how they were raised to talk about food. It's a societal conversation, something that's been a part of us, that, you know, you can't have dessert before food, you know, all the different things, the power of dessert, candy, the special foods, all those kind of things. But even just families and the way they talk about other people, Like, oh, yep. Did you see someone lost weight? They look great. Oh, did you see they gain weight? What's happening? They're losing control. Like the words, the way that people describe, kids soak it all up. Adults soak it all up.
Right.
But we kind of push it aside as like, oh, there's grandma again or there's mom. But kids really listen and pay attention. And it's why, and I would love to hear your thought on how we can change the way we talk about in the home. That to me and my wife and I have discussed this often, that if we do comment about our daughter's body for good, for positive, we also talk about other things. It's not just about body. It's like, you look so beautiful and you've been so kind today. Mm-hmm. Like you're such a good sister and you know, you look gorgeous today, or your hair is so messy. You're such a cutie pie. I love you. And you have been so, you've listened so nicely today, whatever. Yeah. I literally just trying to think of random things.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that we can do or maybe become aware of some of the destructive ways that have been talked about?
Yeah.
And how do we combat that when it's something that is so maybe so readily available to a lot of people?
Yeah. Well, you're speaking to me naming the ways in which the fear of gaining weight or being fat, being in a larger body, is for some folks really the scariest thing in the world. And maybe like the worst thing that could happen. And, you know, that is passed down, right? From generation to generation. It is reinforced in our world in a lot of different ways. But I think, you know, as parents, and I have 15-year-old twins, so I've, you know, been down this road a lot with them, is, you know, we sort of need to tackle our own shit around food and body. And when our kids were born, I remember, like, you know, telling my family, my in-laws, like, listen, you're not allowed to talk about your body in this house, right? There's no like good or bad foods. There's no good or bad bodies. We don't want to talk about weight loss, right? We don't even want to bring in the idea, right, that that our bodies, right, our kids are going to hear that we hate our bodies, right? Or like, oh, that picture, I can't believe how horrible I look in that picture. But that's not that, we have a boundary, right? That's not allowed in our house.
So simple.
And it's simple, and it's yet really hard.
No, that, because that picture thing is something that we all do, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't mean simple. I mean, it's so
right.
Normal.
It happens all the time, right? And I think, you know, unpacking our own feelings around body size is how we help our kids, right? And I think, especially as kids get older, I think being really honest with them, right? To say, I don't have it figured out, right? Like, I'm working on it too. And here are the ways in which I'm working on it in a way where a kid can understand, right? Not the full story, but just saying like, yeah, we're trying to do this differently than the way I was raised. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of unknowns, but here's what we're going to try, right? Here's what I'd like to sort of do. And even tackling, I remember when my kids were in elementary school, someone said, one of the kids, you know, we were drop off at carpool or whatever. And someone said, you know, oh yeah, my kids aren't allowed to use the word fat in our house. I was like, why not? Like, we use it all the time. Like, it's just a descriptor. But if we put all this sort of fear into it, kids hear that that's a really bad word. It's not a bad word, right? Like, I actually, as a, you know, aside, like, I identify as fat. I want to use the word all the time. I want to try to reclaim that word and bring less power to it. It doesn't have to be weaponized against us. But for a lot of folks, it's like really just a very hard word to sit with.
Yeah. And so on that note, because I was just thinking about this as you were talking, first of all, I want to be your best friend. I love the way you're talking. You're amazing. You're amazing. How do we deal with kids commenting? As someone, you said, like, I identify as fat. I know that I used to be extremely unhealthy, underweight, because of my Crohn's.
Mm-hmm.
Part of my journey, I was vomiting every day, diarrhea. It was atrocious. And I look at my wedding picture 8 years ago, and I was so underweight. it looked like I had cancer. Mm-hmm, like I was 175. Like I was, for a 6'2" guy, that's not healthy. And I was like, oh, I fit in my suit so great. I was so proud of myself. But now that I look back on it, I'm not ashamed. I'm not embarrassed. I'm just shocked that that was my viewpoint of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the years, I'm now in remission and I've gained a lot of weight. I'm now heavier than I've ever been. And it's a journey for me to accept that and to understand that that's okay. And yeah, okay, so I have a belly here and I got stuff there. Who doesn't, right? That kind of healthy mentality. And that's something that I'm working internally, right? And I would love to talk about that in a little bit, but when it comes down to kids commenting, like, daddy, you're so big, or you're fat, or why do you have a belly, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do we educate our children or even friends of your kids that see their parents at a certain size and see you at a different size and not get personal and emotional about it, like aggressively, but educate and teach? And what's the way to respond to those things?
Yeah. It's sort of like a $1 million question in a lot of ways, right? And I want to acknowledge what you said in the fact that, like, we can get really uncomfortable, right? This is where, like, our kids say something, right? It's sort of innocuous. It doesn't have, they're not looking at it through the lens that we are.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, we get super uncomfortable, right? It pushes right probably past that edge of discomfort where we get really uncomfortable. And I think it's one of those moments where to acknowledge this is uncomfortable. Like, this is hard, right? But so is talking about sex ed.
Yeah, right? I was going to say.
So we do a lot of things as parents that's really uncomfortable. But the more open we are about it and vulnerable, right, the more our kids understand that. I guess the way I thought about it with my kids is, like, they're going to have a hard time with this in life, right? Because body image is hard, right? There's a lot of messages. But I want them to know when that they walk through the door and they're with us, right, our unit, is that this is a safe place to talk about these things and to struggle. Mm-hmm. It's a safe place to sort of open up and be really vulnerable around it. We don't have to have it all figured out perfectly. We just need to have space to talk about it. And so that's my hope, right? Is that we can sit in some discomfort as parents so that our kids know that it's okay to talk about. And the tactile or the sort of logistical piece that I think is really helpful is to ask a question and to sort of say, like, you know, I'm wondering, listen, you're a therapist. The thing that comes up so often is people say, oh, I feel fat. And I sort of pick out my feelings wheel and I'm like, tell me where fat is on this wheel. It's not there.
No.
So tell me really what you're feeling. And then can we talk about why you are connecting that feeling to fatness? Mm-hmm. Right. And so like if a kid were to point out, right, your belly, right? It's like, yeah, I have a belly. And a lot of people have bellies. It doesn't make me a bad father, right? I still do all the things that I do with you, but there are different body types, right? We all come in different shapes and sizes, and not one size is not better than the other. So yeah, might I have muscles here and you can see them, and other places you might not, but I still have them. They're still there. You just don't see them. Yeah. And that's okay. Right. So like thinking about when they point things out, right, that are discomfort areas. Yeah. We can just name that. Yep. I'm fat. I'm in a bigger body than maybe some of your other friends' parents. But does that make me any less of a dad? Does it, you know, I'm still do all the things that I need to do to sort of help be supportive to you and to this family and to myself, right? It doesn't mean I'm less of a person.
Yeah. And, you know, my daughter recently said, daddy, you're so big, right? And I said, my daughter's name is Ricky. I said, I call her Rickster. I said, Rickster, what do you mean? She goes, you're like a mountain. You're strong. You're so big, daddy. Mm-hmm. You're a big daddy. And I was like, oh, like she's just talking about me being a big guy. Like I'm a big dude. And instead of, and I was like, that's it. I'm going to fight her. You know, like I was ready. I'm like, that's it. We're going down. I'm going to, you know, the boxing gloves are going on. And in reality, I have to realize that she's a kid and she's referring to her world,
Right.
She's tiny. Yeah. I'm big. Right. And we take those comments very personally sometimes without knowing the context of what those comments are. Yeah. And in the end, they're just comments. It's not meant to be hurtful. Yeah. If your kids are trying to be hurtful or doing it purposely when they're older and trying to make fun of you, you have to have a conversation with them about how that's not okay.
Right.
Right. Because that's not just coming to you. That's probably translating to other people as well.
Right.
So we have to kind of shut that down in a way that is understanding of how that impacts people. So to the next thing is, to me, when people have body dysmorphia or body image struggles, to me, it's extreme fear and embarrassment that someone views them as less than, or they even view themselves as less than because of their size.
Sure.
And I see this with people who are at a weight or have gone through massive transformation in an extreme way or a healthy way, let's say, where they go lose 100, 150, 200 pounds, let's say. And they are so consumed by fear at every moment where they will not eat regular peanut butter, but have to have peanut butter powder with water because it's less calories, right? Or, you know, I will never eat bread again. I will only eat, you know, crackers because bread is too caloric, right? Whatever rules they start, it's so much fear. How do we fight and face that fear when it's something that is so pervasive to such a detail-oriented day? Like, it's all throughout the day, all throughout our life for years. How do we start combating and fighting that in a way that we have more compassion and kindness to our world and ourselves?
Well, again, big question, right? Yeah. So there's one word I want to bring in, and that is orthorexia. Orthorexia is not an eating disorder in the DSM-5, but it is probably an undiagnosable eating disorder where folks are obsessed with healthy or clean eating, right? To the fact where it takes over their lives in a lot of ways. And for folks who are listening in Southern California, right, it's sort of like the west side of LA, right? Santa Monica, Beverly Hills. I mean, that's goop, right? Think goop.
Yeah.
Right? That's orthorexia land. And listen, I think from my standpoint, when someone is that rigid, right? Well, let me back up. First off, I really try to compartmentalize my life. When I'm outside of this office, right? And I'm meeting friends or family or whatever, I don't care what you eat. It's not my business. Your food is your thing. I'm not going around judging everyone's food.
People think I do that too, by the way, as a therapist. Huh? Everyone thinks I psychoanalyze
them. Right.
I'm like, I'm off. My brain's off.
Just
be yourself. I don't care.
But like in my office setting, right, is I think about the first place I think about is rigidity. I love Star Wars. Okay.
I was actually going to ask you about that because I see the helmet. I saw your website. Yep.
And I think of rigidity as like the dark side of the force. Right. And I think about when we're that stuck, right, and that rigid, we are, there's a lot of fear and shame behind that feeling. So to me, what's really interesting to sort of explore is where is shame dictating behavior? And to me, if we sort of take a step back, right, that peanut butter powder is rooted in shame. Right. It's rooted in fear of gaining weight, fear of being in a bigger body, fear of letting myself go, right? That I won't be able to control myself around food. Right. And Yoda says, you know, fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering. And it's this fear of weight gain, right? That leads us to hate our bodies. It leads us to suffering and it leads to a lot of anger. On a side note too, peanut butter just tastes so much better than powdered peanut butter. Like it's just one of the saddest. But
that's the thing. It's not about taste anymore. At that point, like you're not enjoying your food.
Yeah.
You are using it. Now, I'm not saying if you're like training for bodybuilding or you're an athlete and you have dietitians and people, hopefully, that are dictating and you're eating for, let's say, bulk and you're having your, like, you know, chicken and rice and whatever, potatoes and, you know, but like a normal everyday person, food is there to enjoy. There's a difference between indulgence and enjoying. And there's also times to indulge, and that's okay too.
Right.
Like,
right.
Like my wife, I told you, is a dietitian, and she has a friend who's like obsessed with Halo Top because she can have two tubs of Halo Top and can't have one tub of Ben and Jerry's.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife is like, and no shade to Halo Top, but like, it's like, but you're having two tubs of ice cream that's chemicals versus a bowl of tasty, yummy ice cream that's delicious and that you really, really, really enjoy.
Yeah.
So you're choosing quantity because of calories versus quality of enjoyment of life.
Right. Well, I will throw shade at Halo. I have no doubt.
Like, I'm not the expert. You are. Yeah. Go have fun.
I think it's the worst thing in the world.
It's terrible. Right? It's convinced people that ice cream is like now healthy, so to speak, even though it's not unhealthy. It's food.
I would even say like the I've had a lot of clients, right, argue, but I actually like Halo Top. Okay.
Good.
Right. I'm like, let's sit down, blind tasting. I'm going to give you some Halo Top and I'm going to give you some Ben and Jerry's. Okay. Mm-hmm. And without knowing what, you tell me which one you really like. Right. And I guarantee you, they're going to say ice cream, the Ben and Jerry's every time. And so when I think about eating, right, I think about, again, how do we move away from rules and center pleasure? It's not whether you love, you know, a salad or a pretzel or a brisket. I don't care, right? But like, how can we make food yummy and flavorful and enjoyable? And we do that when we move away from macronutrients, carbs, protein, and we focus on flavor, salt, fat, acid, and heat.
Mm. There's a great cookbook.
Exactly. That's what I'm basing it on, right?
She's wonderful. Nosrat's
book. And so to me, I'm leaning into that sort of fundamental framework around food rather than macronutrients, right? Because I want people to eat yummy food. And all of that fear, right? Again, fear of eating these foods is rooted in weight gain, is rooted in fat phobia, is rooted in our own bias that we've internalized around these foods.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that people associate fat with unhealthy so often. Yeah. I know this is like a classic example, so I'm sorry to overdo it and beat a dead horse. I was just having a conversation with someone about Lizzo, and someone was like throwing so much hate on her for being like, oh, she's so disgusting and fat. That's what they were saying about her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, do you not realize that she works out every day? She eats a way that she is happy and enjoyable. And I think she has a dietitian that like helps her eat a full balanced diet for her health, and her numbers are good, supposedly, and she's healthy. And she freaking dances, sings, and plays the flute on stage. Can you do that at your smaller size, so to speak? Right. And they're like, of course not. I'm like, so what do you, what disgusts you? Like, we look at people and they're like, I'm disgusted by this. It's disgusting. And I hate when people say that because it's so ridiculously insensitive and so stupid that they think that that's disgusting.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to even throw a radical thought towards you is, her health or anyone else's health.
It's not your business.
So even if she doesn't owe fat people don't owe you good health.
Yeah.
Right. So even if she did have issues that she was struggling with, right, or that she was experiencing, guess what?
Who cares?
It doesn't. Yeah. And it doesn't mean that she's less worthy of respect Love. As a human. Right.
Yeah.
So the fact that we center health in this argument, right, I think makes shame okay.
Yeah. I love that you added that. And I think it's just a problem in society how focused we are on celebrities and like paying attention, like those beach body pictures of like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it's like, oh my gosh, he let himself go. First of all, there's no freaking way that anyone could be that consistent with that kind of body type. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
That's insanity. And how we care, like we care so much, like who cares? They're humans. And I think it's interesting. And I would love to hear your thoughts about like when the Photoshop versus the unphotoshopped pictures,
mm-hmm.
right? And everyone's like, oh my gosh, they're so brave. To me, it's so sad that we have the thought that they're brave for just showing themselves. Like when Demi Lovato like unfiltered her pictures, or Selena Gomez, I forgot which one of them. And everyone's like, oh, she's so brave. I'm like, I love that she shared it. I'm so happy to show girls and men and women, that it's okay to just take a picture of yourself and enjoy yourself and love yourself. But the fact that our mentality is, she's so brave for showing the truth and being honest about her body, is a sad place to begin with, if that makes sense what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it speaks to where our kids are going to have a very different experience than we did as growing up. Mm. And it's less about social media. It's more about the filter.
Mm.
And it's more about the ways in which photos are manipulated without really people even noticing anymore, right? Filters are just like really ubiquitous.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to probably be the more damaging thing. The things with Selena Gomez and other folks sort of revealing those things is, I think it also speaks to the difference in which, and the pressure with which a female identified individual is going to struggle in this area versus a male identified person.
Yeah.
And there is a different standard, right? It is a harsher critique.
It is.
I think we have, as men, more leeway, still a lot of judgment and still a lot of like critique, but I think there's a lot of misogyny that shows up in these sort of spaces.
Yeah. And even in, I know we're getting in a little weird direction, we'll get back to the topic at hand, but like, even if you've ever watched conversations with, I can't remember his name now. He did Magic Mike, Channing Tatum.
Yep.
Right. And he was on a talk show and they were like, oh, you're going to do another one. He's like, hell no. He's like, I can't starve myself again. That was insanity. Because I can't do that. That's not realistic. I cannot do that again. And then you look at, let's say, for example, like Chris Pratt on Parks and Rec, who was, I thought, no problem at all with him. He's Chris Pratt. But now he's like, he had an interview recently where he talked about the idea of how much he can eat, or how like he can have less healthy, whatever. I forgot the terminology he used.
Yeah.
He described his habits of eating, but now, and it was just so, there's like some unhealthiness of like the way he was talking about how the standard he has to keep up as an action actor.
You can't be a fat Guardian of the Galaxy.
You can't.
Nope.
For some reason.
It's unacceptable. Yeah, which is a problem.
For some reason, yeah. And, you know, I was actually I just watched last night Shazam 2, and there was a character who was fat. And it was really nice to see that there were just all types of people.
Uh-huh.
You know, as the family. I'm like, thank you. Like, it's great. Yeah. So for you with the idea, and I want to go a little bit to the men's perspective of this, is the idea of, there are a lot of guys who go through transformations, and you know, the pressure of going to the gym and working out and being, you know, buff and strong and swole, or whatever terminology you would like to use. How do you deal with someone who is consistently, maybe obsessively, going to the gym to get a body that is never good enough, because they still look in their mirror, and even though they've made so much progress and can deadlift 800 pounds and squat a million pounds and all the accolades and all the strength that they hope to have, and they're at a body that they thought they wanted to have, but it's still never good enough.
Mm-hmm.
How do you start to look in the mirror and love yourself for the efforts that you've made, or even the progress that might not be able to even happen because it's unattainable?
Yeah. It's such a common narrative, right? And I think gym culture is a very common space to see a lot of eating disorder and disordered eating for folks, for men especially. Mm-hmm. It's reinforced, it's actually encouraged, it's taught. And athletics does that for a lot of folks. I think about I'm going to go back to rigidity, right? Yeah. Is like, you know, if your day is unraveled, right, because you didn't get X amount of protein in a day, right? Or you're avoiding when your buddy says, hey, it's, I'm going out for pizza and wings to watch the game tonight. You're going to come. No, I can't, because one, I got to wake up and go to the gym at 4 a.m. But two, I got to, you know, I can't eat that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. right? Is I think about how is rigidity showing up for you, right? And mm-hmm. where can we be flexible? Because the pursuit of being in the gym, like working out, right? Pushing our body, that's great. And we can't fight our genetics. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to be LeBron James, right? If I were to shoot baskets every day, right, for hours and work really hard, I'm not going to be that. You know, some bodies are going to gain muscle quicker than others. It doesn't mean one's better than the other. I think acceptance of our body is saying like, okay, here's what I can do. And here's also what is, I can't. In my head, I would love it if this could happen, but I can't, right? And I mm-hmm. think there's some grieving in that, right? I think there's, I talk about grieving a lot actually in this work. And I think there's can be grieving around, this is the idea I had in my head around what I thought I should be able to accomplish with regards to my body. And I can't, right? Either I've gotten older, it's just unattainable, right? But like, you know, we all have limits, and it's okay to like sort of say, yeah, that might be enough, right? I think the other part of it is I wish this goes to like, I wish other folks were talking about that as a disordered thought more, and accepting that this is how eating disorders are normalized in a culture, rather than saying, well, you know, have you tried this, right? Or have you tried this workout or what, you know, like, listen, some of this might just be part of that mental health issue that we're yeah. talking about, right? I'm going to hyper focus on this because there's mm-hmm. some other stuff underlying that is just really hard for me to deal with. So I'm going to make it all about my body getting big, because that's where I get praise. That's where I get reinforced. This is my community, right? Mm-hmm. Who are actually feeding into this, right? Encouraging me to do more and more. It's hard to pull away from that, right? Because I'm yeah. getting something from it.
Yeah. And then you have the reality of messages being pushed from these influencers or mm-hmm. specialists like
yeah.
the carnivore MD or Liver King or all these ridiculousness of
super ridiculousness. It's yeah. just
ridiculous and insanity. They're on steroids, by the way, just so everyone knows. It's not because they eat liver and testicles.
Yeah.
And the idea of what is good and bad to get this quote unquote idealistic body.
Yeah.
Just that concept alone is ridiculous. Like deciding what is an ideal body. Right.
Right.
It's so unhealthy. And my wife has had to talk to me about it. Not that I'm obsessive about working out. I wish I was a little more into working out just for my general health of mm-hmm. of my heart and movement and flexibility and longevity, not for muscle growth and mm-hmm. abs. I could care less if I have abs. But the idea of what is movement and what is considered, what makes you happy in movement,
mm-hmm.
Taking a walk or going on a bike versus, you know, an extreme or intense workout,
right?
Or, you know, all these things is just shift of mindset and a pivot of acceptance. And I think yeah. you have a hard time. And how do you deal with someone who is used to it so much that they're okay with the lifestyle? Maybe externally, maybe internally they're not, but like mm-hmm. the idea of like, hey, buddy, you want to come out to pizza?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'll hang out with you. And they don't eat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They don't eat and they hang out. They have water or maybe a beer or whatever, but they won't eat the pizza, but they get to hang out. Is that something that you think is there a good compromise, or is it that the rigidity is still a bad thing, but they're okay with it. I have a happy life. Okay. So I swap out this for that, and I don't eat as much carbs, and I eat more protein in my diet, and they're healthy, and all these things are good. All the numbers are good, but it might not be from a dietitian's perspective, either the smartest or healthiest habits.
Yeah.
What would you say about that?
Yeah. Again, here's probably the radical piece is, I don't know how many dietitians are talking about consent, but I really believe in consent and informed consent. Right. So for me, right, with the folks that I'm working with is if we look at all the big picture stuff, right. And they're like, you know, they can see where it's rigid. They can see where it's probably disordered and it's impacting their life both positively, but also negatively.
Yeah.
I can't force them to change.
Yeah.
That's not my job. Right. So like, I think my hope and what I really try to emphasize with everyone I work with is how do we build curiosity? How do we build curiosity into this experience around food and body? How can we, this is again, like sort of like, again, Darth Vader versus Yoda, right? Yeah. How do we be more like Yoda and be calm and at peace and be thoughtful about our choices and our actions and being able to sort of look at them, maybe even after, right? Without shame, without judgment, to say, huh, yeah, that's really, that was hard. Right. I might have handled that differently. Or, yeah, I'm sort of missing out on some stuff. Right. It's no longer becoming sustainable for me to do this because it does take a lot to, as someone who's in it, right, it takes a lot to give up diet culture.
Yeah.
It takes a lot to pull ourselves out of it and to say, and to no longer be quote unquote in it. Right. To where we get some perspective and say, like, yeah, you know, I thought everything was okay, right? But it really wasn't. And what I have a meme sort of loaded on my Zoom background, right? And it's the everything's fine meme where like the dog is in the burning room, right? Yeah. Cuz a lot of folks I'm working with will say like it's okay, everything's fine. I'm like, okay. But this is fine. Like the house is on fire. Things are burning down. You're just used to it.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, if we get some perspective and get you out of the house,
you realize it's burning.
Right? You realize it's burning, right? I don't want to settle for fine.
Yeah.
You know, but there's better stuff out there than fine. And it's going to take work. And again, the reason I think about consent is because I'm asking a lot when folks are coming to me, like in that situation that you're talking about. I'm asking a lot of them, like I'm asking for a lot of trust, and that doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, you know this, right? You're a therapist, right? But like, I need to really build some trust with someone because I'm asking them to do something really hard.
Yeah.
And we do it incrementally.
I love that you add that piece. I got two more questions then, of course. The first one is that, you know, someone might be so used to a way of life that has suited them for a time period, but has now is not needed anymore. How do we let go of that past standard or self? Because I love that you use the idea of grief. And I talk about that a lot also as a therapist, like the grief expectations or hopes or dreams that just can't happen because reality has changed.
Yeah.
So how do we accept that this reality, like, yeah, I'm getting older, or I have kids, I don't have the same time to do certain things, or I can't eat, like I've lost the weight that I, let's say, wanted to, and now I feel healthier, or whatever that feeling you're chasing, whether that's healthy or not, that's a different conversation. And I've hit that mark, but I'm still chasing it. Like, how do we let go of that hope or that standard that has been something so part of us?
Yeah. Well, I think, again, I think it's understanding with some compassion and empathy why it was there. You know, like again, like I said earlier, it served a purpose, right? It was doing something for us. And the compassion and empathy too, that pulling away from it is hard. You know, like the folks I'm working with a lot have gained and lost weight their entire lives.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are going to regain weight after losing it, right? The study is pretty clear, right? At around anywhere between 85 and 95% of people are going to regain weight. It doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. Mm-hmm. It actually means your body's working exactly as it was designed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we move out of blaming ourselves, right, and into more like sort of acceptance of just our body,
mm-hmm.
I think that helps us pull out of it, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't need to fight with myself and my body anymore, right? I can be at home in it in a variety of body sizes, you know? Mm-hmm. And again, I think it's tackling in pieces that internalized narrative, right? That like fat is bad, you know, which is a tough narrative to change.
Yeah.
Right. But what I know, what the research is very clear on, is that for people to get to a body size where they've lost a significant amount of weight, they're often restricting a lot. And that restriction is not usually sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And again, I want to normalize all foods, salt, fat, acid, heat. I want foods to be yummy. I want people to sit down to a table with family, with friends, and be able to eat a meal, enjoy it, and stay connected to the people that they're with,
mm-hmm.
not go into their head and like mm-hmm. start counting everything, right? Like, you know, my wife makes challah almost every Friday, and there's something about challah that brings people together. And in our current world, there's a lot of people who aren't going to eat the challah,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it's got carbs. But like, yeah, it does. And it's how we connect, right? It's that simple food that's entirely yummy that is also metaphorical in our connection. And building that connection is really important.
Mm. Whew, I agree. Okay. I love this. There's so much more that I could ask and more emotional things and vulnerable things, but we don't have that much time.
Part two?
I would love a part two. Are you kidding me? Just like crying and talking about men and the stigma and the of mental health and being real and vulnerable about the issues that plague so many of us, which is our yeah. evaluation of self, not feeling good enough, which I think is all tied in. But on a side note, you do look like George Lucas, by the way, just so you know. I don't know if you've heard that.
I actually have heard it once before recently. Yeah. So, yeah. So,
like, I love
things could be worse. That could be worse, right? Yeah. I'll take George.
You know, hey, take George. Yeah. You know, I didn't call you. You don't look like Yoda, so that's you know, a little yeah. green man.
Yeah.
But you know what? He's pretty chill. So, and he speaks in mysterious ways. So maybe
you start.
To, you know,
right.
Whenever you give a public speaking thing, you just talk in backwards words and see if anyone actually pays attention.
I mean, believe it or not, I do have a Yoda talk that I give to folks. So we can talk about that later.
Oh, I love that. But again, I just want to give an opportunity to give
yeah.
one to two things that you hope people who are listening.
Yeah.
Whether and I specifically would hope if you can give it focus towards men who
sure.
are struggling with their body image and how they view themselves of being good enough in the yep. body that they're in. Just yep. one to two quick
yeah.
things or long things.
It's no, your, it's no. My first thing, and especially to dudes out there, is you're not alone. Like, you are not alone in this struggle. It's not talked about enough. It's not given enough time or space. But you are not alone. There are so many other folks struggling just like you. And when we understand that, right, we find our common humanity. We challenge the inner critic, right, that this is just something I need to like fix, right, or something I need to like willpower myself out of. Nope. It's really common to have these kinds of struggles. So you're not alone. Number two, your body is not a problem that needs fixing. Okay.
Mm.
They're getting smaller doesn't fix the problems, right? It doesn't, it creates some privilege around body size, right? It makes mm-hmm. it a little bit easier to navigate the world, but it's not the path to acceptance.
Mm.
We can't shrink our way into acceptance. And as soon as we stop thinking of about our body as a problem, I think we can do different things for it that feel kinder and gentler and less punitive and less punishing. Mm-hmm. So those would be the two things that I would hope people could sort of take away right now, or even just sort of start to be curious about in their own experience.
Yeah. Oof. I'm going to quote that one. You can't shrink your way into acceptance. I love that. That's really powerful. Thank you so much for being on the show, Aaron. It's an honor. Where can people get to know you more and find, which is going to be in the show notes, everyone. So if you're not listening, don't worry.
So the best way to sort of connect with me is I'm on Instagram at Aaron Flores, RDN. I also have a podcast called Men Unscripted. There are 20 episodes out. We're going to start production on season 3 very soon. But there are, 20 stories out there for folks to listen to. And then through Instagram, you can learn about some of the groups I run. I run a men's group. I run a group for providers who are experiencing eating disorders. It's where also you can learn about working with me individually.
I love it. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been great talking to you.
Hello. This week's episode is sponsored by Alma. Going in network with insurance can be really tough. The paperwork, who to talk to, how to get it done, all the wait time to be able to work with certain clients. Filling all of the right paperwork is time-consuming and tedious, and even after you're done, it can take months to get credentialed and start seeing clients. That's why Alma makes it easy and financially rewarding to accept insurance. When you join their insurance program, you can get credentialed within 45 days and access enhanced reimbursement rates with major payers. They also handle all the paperwork, from eligibility checks to claim submissions, and guarantee payment within 2 weeks of each appointment. Once you've joined Alma's insurance program, you can see clients in your state of licensure regardless of where you're working from. You know, it's been really wonderful to partner with Alma and use it myself. Without them, I probably would not be able to do what I do as a private therapist, having a private practice in 2 states. So learn more about building a thriving private practice with Alma at helloalma.com. That's helloalma.com to get started. Thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. It means a lot to me because without you, the listeners, this podcast can't happen. So every listen, every download, every rate, review, and share means so much to me. And I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Talking about wellness, mental health, and relationships is one of my passions. And that's what this podcast is all about. So thanks so much for tuning in. As always, if you have any questions, concerns, ideas, thoughts, collaborations, email me at thedudetherapist@gmail.com. Always feel free to DM me on Instagram at @thedudetherapist. Don't forget to be kind to yourself and to others. And as always, see you next time on the Dude Therapist podcast.